Well, early intervention is a catch cry of modern life. It's that idea that if we can get in early and deal with something before it becomes a problem, then we might possibly avoid a much worse situation later. As you can hear, there are lots of mights and maybes and possiblys in these scenarios, but it's when you combine our desire to prevent bad things happening with developments in brain science and genetics that we get into some tricky areas. Our next guest is interested in the intersection of criminology, risk and susceptibility, genetics, and modern brain science. Nicholas Rose is the head of the Department of Social Science, Health and Medicine at King's College London. He's written numerous books and papers, including the most recent book he co-authored titled Neuro, the New Brain Sciences and the Management of the Mind. Nicholas is in Australia right now and joins us here on Sunday Extra. Welcome, Nicholas.
Good to see you, and thanks for having me on your program.
It's our pleasure. Now, tell us about the culture of caution and prevention that you think we live under.
Well, I think we don't have to think very hard before we see that we live in a culture that's very risk averse, a culture of precaution, of preemption, which seeks, as you said in your introduction, to identify problems early and intervene early in the belief that earlier is always better. And we can see this in a range of areas. We can see it in the rise of precaution and risk prevention in the area of terrorism and the attempts to screen out those who might pose a risk to our society. So at that macro level, we can see it in the area of health. If we can screen someone and catch a disease before it shows itself, that's by far the best way of intervening and preventing that disease. And we can see risk prevention everywhere, from the way in which we organize our traffic systems, our towns, to the way in which we manage our everyday life.
So earlier is always better, isn't it?
It sounds obvious, doesn't it? A tiny bit of prevention is worth a lot of cure. And it's hard to disagree with that. It's hard to disagree with that if we know that we're intervening on something that will inescapably lead to something that we want to prevent. But the difficulty that we have is that very frequently in the areas that I've been thinking about and that we're talking about today, we don't know that a sign that we pick up very, very early on is going to lead to a disease in the future, or is going to lead to criminal behavior in the future, or is going to lead to someone committing a violent act in the future. We think we know. There's a probability that this person might, or people like this person might. So risk and prediction is always probabilistic. 5 people in 100, 5 people in 10, even 5 people in 6 might be likely to do this, but not 6 people in 6, not 10 people in 10.
Yeah, well, so far we've been talking in relatively general terms about being risk averse as a society, but how do developments in neuroscience start playing into this idea that we can screen out a propensity for aggression of personality disorders?
Okay, well, that links to your previous question of risky individuals rather than individuals at risk. Is it possible to identify early an individual who will go on in their later life to commit antisocial or problematic acts, or to become the subject of psychiatric diseases, severe psychiatric disorders? Now, here's where both neuroscience and genetics comes in. Is it possible to identify the genetics or the brain signature that enable you to identify whether someone, for instance, will become an individual with antisocial personality disorder? Is it possible to take a child, perhaps a child who's being problematic at school, getting into fights at school, to do a genetic test on that child and to identify whether or not that child has the genetic profile that seems to look like the genetic profile of adults who commit antisocial acts, or to put that child into a brain scanner and see whether the child seems to have a pattern of brain activation in certain circumstances that looks like the pattern of brain activation of adults who are psychopaths or who commit antisocial acts. These are not hypotheticals that I'm giving you. These are descriptions of ongoing research programs, because, of course, the people who undertake those research programs say, look, the life of a child who goes on to get into trouble with the law, or the life of a child who goes on to have a severe antisocial disorder or a severe psychiatric disorder, those are miserable lives. And if we could predict early, if we could intervene early, we would save not only the social costs, not only the family costs, not only the community costs, but also the misery for that individual themselves. So it looks like a very virtuous kind of research to undertake and a very virtuous kind of strategy to pursue, provided you can predict with a certain amount of confidence that that marker that you find, that genetic marker, that brain marker, is going to demonstrate that the person will go on to develop this kind of disorder or commit those kinds of acts. Because in our society, as you probably know, to say to a child, to say to his or her parents, to say to his or her doctors, little Johnny is not just a little bit aggressive at school, but little Johnny is likely to go on and develop a severe psychiatric disorder or antisocial personality disorder. That's going to lead to changes in the way in which all those adults, and indeed little Johnny himself, understands every little act of, every little fight he gets into, every little fight. Is this a little sign of something to come?
My guest is Nicholas Rose from the King's College London. He's a guest in Australia over the last fortnight. He's a guest of both ANU in Canberra and the University of New South Wales. And we're chatting about the predicting risk in the age of biology and brain science. Nicholas, are you also concerned about the kinds of intervention that the child receives? That is, medicating them versus a more costly long-term social intervention?
Benefits or risks of these kinds of interventions are absolutely related to the kind of intervention that you choose. As it happens, the best interventions and the most frequent interventions for children who are thought liable to develop antisocial personality disorder, for instance, are actually quite benign. They're training the parents to find different ways of responding to little Johnny's aggression. They're training the teachers to not respond in certain ways that are likely to intensify that behavior. They're training the individual themselves, little Johnny himself, to curb his impulses and direct his energies in a more socially responsible way. But of course, we also see intervention with drugs, especially for children who are predicted to develop, to be likely or probable, have a high likelihood of developing a severe psychiatric disorder, a psychotic disorder. And those interventions with drugs do seem to me to be problematic because for reasons that we could discuss, very few of these drugs have actually been trialed with children. So the consequence of intervening with really often quite powerful psychiatric drugs on children whose brains are rapidly developing, as we know, are kind of unknown at the moment. And I think we should be very, very cautious about the increasing tendency to seek to intervene early on those children using strategies of medication.
You know, there was some really interesting research 15 years ago, which has had a huge influence on how mainstream science is thinking about all this. It's the work of Capsi and his colleagues. Can you tell us a bit about his work?
Right. So Caspi and Moffat and their colleagues looked at a long-term, a longitudinal study, as we call it, of a cohort, a group of children born in New Zealand, as it happens, the Dunedin study, who were being followed up every few years from birth through into adulthood. And they looked at many things, but in particular, they looked at whether or not some of these children were going to develop into adults who had antisocial behavior or who suffered from psychiatric disorders, in particular, depression. And they tried to see, because they had genetic evidence on the children from when they were young, they tried to see whether this genetic evidence in very particular regions of the human genome would predict whether or not they were likely to develop antisocial personalities and get in trouble with the law, or whether or not they were likely to develop depression or other kinds of disorders. And they found something very interesting. They found in the majority of cases, the genetics, they were looking specifically at genetics, the genetics itself did not predict, but the genetics coupled with childhood maltreatment for those children who had a specific genetic profile and who experienced adverse events in childhood, that did predict. It predicted probabilistically. It didn't mean that if you had this genetic profile and you had adverse events, you were absolutely certain to have these unpleasant consequences later on. But there was a higher likelihood that you would. Now, this is the real, this is both extremely interesting, but it's also the real problem with risk prediction. Risk prediction is probabilistic. It says 1 in 100, 1 in 50, 1 in 20, 1 in 10, 1 in 5 people who look like this will go on to develop this disorder or have this kind of antisocial personality. But what about the 4 or the 10 or the 20 or the others who don't? We are unable to make those predictions with sufficient clarity and sufficient precision to warrant interventions, especially interventions that have themselves got adverse consequences.
This is exceedingly interesting, but it's also very complicated. I just want to get back to the heart of the matter here about getting the right balance, in your view, with risk prediction, you know, between doing something to possibly prevent future harm to others, but at the same time, not widening the net too far and making children or adults as potentially criminal.
Those who we choose to risk predict, those who we choose to subject to these kinds of regimes, depend very much on the kind of society that we're in. For instance, take young men who drive cars, young men between 18 and 24 who drive cars. They are a very, very high risk group. The number of incidents of severe injury and death that are related to those young men driving those cars is very high.
Yes.
And yet we don't subject them to risk analysis and risk prediction, but we subject others, people who we think are liable to mental health disorders, we subject them to risk predictions. So we need to think quite carefully about who and where in our society we think that risk warrants kinds of screening and kinds of intervention. And there are ethical issues there, because if we don't screen the young men, but we do screen the kids, or we do screen the person who has a first incidence of a psychiatric disorder, who suffers a mental health problem, we do screen them to see whether they're going to go on and get into trouble, then the balance, I think, is very uneven.
Yeah, well, none of this has gone sci-fi yet, but we are on that path, don't you think? I mean, brain scans have been used to restrain people in some way as crime prevention strategies. Can you see that happening? I mean, where is all this leading to, in other words?
Well, there certainly is a sci-fi image of it leading to the screening and the prediction of people who are pre-criminals.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know, we've all seen Minority Report and we know about the pre-crimes.
Indeed.
And there are indeed attempts to identify the particular brain patterns of brain activation in certain circumstances that are going to lead people to be more or less impulsive, more likely to respond to various kinds of incidents with aggression and so on. At the moment, that is sci-fi. It is sci-fi because many people are very aware of the difficulty of making determinate interventions on one person because of a highly probabilistic assessment that they may or may not be in a high-risk group. But the neuroscience is getting more accurate, and there are certain circumstances, especially in our risk-averse society, especially when we're very concerned about terrorism, we're very concerned about people who might have, quote, malintent, as it's called. There are certainly areas where some people say that even if we overpredict, even if we over-restrain, even if we over-exclude, if we exclude 10 people or constrain 10 people and we manage to predict one, to constrain one person out of that 10 who's going to go on to commit an antisocial act, then it's worthwhile. So these are social, they're political, they're ethical judgments that we have to take about the rise of these risk prediction and risk intervention scenarios in every society that we look at.
An enlightening tutorial about an exceedingly complicated subject. Nicholas, thanks so much for being on Sunday Extra.
Thanks for having me.
That was Nicholas Rose. He's from King's College London and he's the author of Neuro, The New Brain Science and the Management of the Mind.